Okay, thank you for, I'd like to first thank the organizers for having me to give this talk. And so this is work that I did, that when I was at the University of Toronto with Hye-Yeon Ki and Eric, who you just saw. I'm at the University of Waterloo now, so this is about a generic spin model for the honeycomb iridates, including some effects of trigonal distortion. So today you've heard a lot about honeycomb iridates, so I'm going to go very, very quickly through my first sort of introductory slides. So we've seen this CADEV model a lot, and so I'm not going to try to convince you that it's interesting right now. And again, we know that these are built from these J-effective half states. You know, they're strongly spin orbit entangled wave functions that, you know, give rise to interesting anisotropic physics. And again, there was this lovely proposal from Shkreli and Kaluun where they showed that if you had edge-shared octahedron and you only had oxygen-mediated hopping, you could generate this coupling in a real solid-state system. One thing I just want to point out for future use is that when you do this, it comes out negative. So I'm going to call this ferromagnetic coupling. And again, very, very quickly, you can, in principle, realize this type of physics in these honeycomb iridates, these 2D sodium iridium oxides and lithium, the alpha lithium iridium oxide. Okay, I won't redo that again. So we know that they're not spin liquids, right? We know they order magnetically into the zigzag pattern for the sodium, and for the alpha lithium, some indications of spiral order. Again, there's no definite statement on that just yet. So what else do we know about this order? Well, you might think that if we see this thing order, you might have gotten the spin liquid physics completely wrong. Maybe it's not CADEV, maybe it's something Heisenberg-like. Recent evidence shows that this is not true, that the spatial and spin correlations are in fact tied together. You can see here lovely data that the wave vector and the spin correlations are strongly correlated in this material just above the transition. So you should still expect strongly anisotropic interactions even if we've moved away from the CADEV limit. Put it up there. I should have left it there. No, it turned itself off. Sorry. It's got to reboot, so I should have moved it. Okay, that's where we were. What else do we know about the zigzag phase? Sorry for the technical delay. So one important feature that hasn't been pointed out so much in the talk so far today is this inelastic neutron data on powder samples, where you see that in the ordered phase below this transition of 15 Kelvin, there's, you know, some amount of scattering that's at quite low energies. So from probes like RICS, you expect the energy scales in these compounds to be quite large, on the order of tens of MeV. Here we're seeing we have scattering down to essentially their resolution, 1 or 2 MeV. So that's sort of one piece of information, one of the only pieces of information we have about the low energy structure of this state beyond the ordering vector. So the sort of canonical theoretical approach that's used is to study this Heisenberg-CADEV model, which you've seen much of today, this bond-dependent CADEV exchange plus this isotropic Heisenberg. You know, physically, as I noted, you could get this from an oxygen-mediated path where you go into the oxygen to get between the d orbitals. This J can be generated from some direct exchange between the d orbitals. And the phase diagrams model has been studied extensively, as, again, you've already seen today. So I'm going to move quickly. So there's sort of five phases. There's this CADEV spin liquid, which survives the finite Heisenberg coupling. There's a large anti-ferromagnetic phase and a large ferromagnetic phase near the anti-ferromagnetic Heisenberg and ferromagnetic Heisenberg limits. And as well, there's the stripy phase and the zigzag phase that appear when these that appear next to the Kadev phase when you add finite j. So you see that there is a zigzag phase in that phase diagram, at least somewhere. Do the properties of that phase, ignoring how we got to that point in the phase diagram, you know, agree with the properties of the material? So you could look at this excitation spectrum to try to figure this out. So if you do a sort of semi-classical calculation, 1 over S type treatment of the excitations, you find that there is low energy excitations even in this highly anisotropic model. This is essentially due to some accidental classical degeneracy in the Heisenberg-Kadev model. But you're still stuck with this fact that this Kadev coupling needs to be on the positive side, near the anti-ferromagnetic Kadev limit. So from this oxygen-mediated type argument, you expect this coupling to come out negative. And ab initio studies have sort of been very consistent with that recently. So what's going on here? So there have been some proposed solutions to this, many by at least 5 people in the audience, where you can, for example, flip the sign of K by adding additional exchange paths, add various types of further neighbor couplings, either Heisenberg or, as we heard earlier from Natalia, second neighbor Kadev. You can include monoclinic distortions, or you can actually include all of them all at once. I might have missed some, but there's at least a handful of proposals that can solve this problem. So let's sort of look at this in general and say, what's the sort of couplings that are allowed in this material? So realistically, this structure has both monoclinic and trigonal distortion, and you might expect second and even third neighbor couplings to be important. So if you just look at each bond, for example, the nearest neighbor bond, there are 4 symmetry allowed exchanges. And because of the monoclinic distortion, this bond is slightly different than this bond, and so there's actually another 6 exchanges allowed on that bond. So at nearest neighbor, we're already at 10 symmetry allowed exchanges. Now we start doing second and third, even ignoring the monoclinic distortion, we add at least another 8. So, you know, some in the audience are brave enough to study this full model with all 20 or so symmetry allowed exchanges. I'm going to sort of back away from that very, very difficult question and just try to look at the simplest possible context. So what's the simplest consistent model we can write down? And then sort of throw these questions at it. Can one find a zigzag phase near this ferromagnetic Kadev limit? And with these anisotropic interactions, can you understand why there might be these low energy spin excitations? So the simplest limit we can come up with is we remove all the monoclinic distortion, we remove all the trigonal distortion, we remove all the further neighbor couplings. So we look at the nearest neighbor model alone without any distortions. As was mentioned in the previous talk, if you do this, the allowed terms are this JK gamma model, this Heisenberg-Kadev gamma model, where we have the Heisenberg coupling and the Kadev coupling we saw before, but we also have this symmetric off-diagonal exchange. So the structure of this, so the Kadev bonds, for example, here the Z components of the spins are coupled, and then for this gamma term, it's the X and the Y that are coupled on this bond, and you cyclically permute it. So within a super exchange calculation, once you include DD hopping, as well as the oxygen-mediated hopping, you generate this immediately. Essentially, you go through the oxygen one way and then back through the D orbital. So it's a cross term between this direct DD hopping and this oxygen-mediated hopping. And so I just want to emphasize that even without the distortions, this is not Heisenberg-Kadev. Okay, so what does this do? So I've sort of organized this into a similar phase diagram as you saw in the last talk, where what I've put is the Heisenberg-Kadev model on the outside of this ring. And then as you move in, you're turning on this gamma term. Okay, so in addition to all the phases we saw in the Heisenberg-Kadev limit, there's actually 2 new sets of phases. So there's this 120 degree order, which is sort of reminiscent of something you might see in the triangular lattice, except it's sort of on both of the sublattices of the honeycomb. There's a new zigzag region here that comes in for large gamma, and there are incommensurate spiral orders that appear near the ferromagnetic limit, ferromagnetic Kadev limit. So this is all classical. So what are these incommensurate phases? I've sort of labeled them kind of roughly here. This one region just means that the dominant wave vector of the state is in the first Brayton zone. Two means it's in the extended Brayton zone. So this dominant wave vector changes as you move through the phases somewhat smoothly. They're not single Q states, so I'm not sure if I want to call them multi-Q, but they're definitely not single Q spiral states. And this phase one is actually quite energetically close to the zigzag phase. Okay, so again, these are highly quantum mechanical systems. Does any of this hold up? To try to look whether quantum effects could be important here, we did a sort of a small-scale exact diagonalization study, 24 sites. So you can capture essentially everything except the spiral order in a cluster of that size. The 120 fits, the zigzag fits, the stripey fits. And so you can see those clearly here, where I've colored this phase diagram based essentially on the dominant part of the static structure factor. And so here you can see this sort of tiny cadav phase here where the liquid is a little bit stable to the addition of J and gamma. It's a little bit wider here, but it's unclear whether it survives too much with finite gamma. Where in the middle here, it's unclear at all what the phase is. So classically, this is the region where there's an incommensurate spiral. So if we're talking about a 24-site cluster, it's unclear whether we could really capture that properly anyway. Okay, so in principle, I've sort of failed here, right? I told you I want to find a zigzag phase near the ferromagnetic cadav limit by looking at the simplest consistent model, and all I found were incommensurate spirals. So let's go to the next simplest model. So one could, in principle, add monoclinic distortion, trigonal distortion, further neighbor couplings. I'm going to add trigonal distortion. So in the crystal structure, the sodium has a trigonal compression out of the plane. If you sort of go through this, you can find that it introduces a single nearest neighbor coupling in addition to the three you already had. So it's sort of a cousin of this symmetric off-diagonal exchange. Instead of the, for example, on the Z bond, instead of X and Y coupling, you have X and Z coupling and Y and Z coupling. And if you do sort of a rough microscopic calculation of this, for trigonal compression, you might expect it to come out negative. So I'm sort of going to focus on the adding a negative gamma prime when thinking about this sodium iridate. Okay, so what does that do? So classically, as I told you before, the zigzag phase and this one spiral phase were actually quite close in energy. And it turns out adding this negative gamma prime actually tips the balance towards the zigzag phase. So this one phase that occurred here is almost completely overtaken by a zigzag phase. So this is actually quite a small gamma prime. It's maybe a 20th of K, and it completely enlarges this phase and brings it down almost to this ferromagnetic cadav limit. Again, you might ask, how does this hold up away from the classical limit? I've sort of changed the phase diagram, but here, in the middle of these plots is the cadav limit here. Gamma goes up, and then J is running along the x-axis, and then each slice is a different value of gamma prime. So here you see this mess that we saw in the exact diagonalization that I associated with maybe the stripy phase classically. And then as I turn on a negative gamma prime, you see these zigzag correlations start to develop. So this is consistent with the expectations from the classical calculation. Okay, so we've sort of partially answered one of the questions. Can we find a zigzag phase within this simple model, or second simplest model, close to the ferromagnetic cadav limit? So it seems like we can. Can we explain why this energy scale and the spin excitations is so small? So in these highly anisotropic models, you don't really expect to find things like Goldstone modes, right? Unless you have a classical degeneracy like in this HK model. So generically, you would expect as soon as you include this gamma or this gamma prime, you would start opening up gaps in the spin waves. And if you made them significant, you know, greater than 1 or 2 MeV, you wouldn't have these low energy excitations anymore. And microscopically, it's not clear that gamma should be small. There are some calculations, depending on how you go, there's disagreement on how large it is. But generically, it doesn't have to be small. So generically, you wouldn't expect these low energy excitations. So how do we put these things together? So we just sort of ignored this, and we went and tried to compute how big it was, ignoring this argument. Asked the question, how big is the gap if you include this gamma? So we just fixed the calculation into the zigzag phase, did a 1 over S, looked at the gap. And so what you find is that in this Heisenberg-Cadav limit, for the zigzag phase, it's gapless, as you should find. And then basically everywhere else, it's gapped, except for this line here at large gamma. So this was sort of unexpected when we saw it, which is if you increase gamma here, you open up a gap, but then for a significant gamma, somewhat comparable to the Kadeev exchange, the gap actually closes again. And beyond this, it's not a point, it's actually a line in parameter space. And if you include gamma prime, it actually becomes a surface. So there's something going on here. This second gapless regime for large gamma is surprising. So after we found this, there was this nice paper by Chalupka et al. Where they actually found a decent explanation for this, which is there's a duality in this model, essentially. So this JK gamma gamma prime model is actually sort of self-dual under this transformation. So it kind of looks like a mess. But if you plug in that point or that line that I showed you, this large gamma line actually maps back to the Heisenberg-Kadeev model. And you have the accidental degeneracy again, and you expect gapless spin waves. And beyond this, there's this four sublattice duality that in the original HK model that can map a point in the zigzag phase back to the nail antiferromagnet. So if you trace this through, you can start with very large gamma, some gamma prime, a very large K. Then through the duality, you can map that to the HK model in the zigzag phase. And then from that point, you can map that back to the nail phase, which is essentially not solvable in the exact sense, but you know, theoretically tractable, right? And where you'd expect to find gapless excitations. OK, so that's kind of the story for the sodium. Can we say anything about the lithium? So there are hints of incommensurate order. And this problem of finding the incommensurate order without gamma prime is actually essentially a blessing when we're talking about lithium. And it turns out if you go the other way with gamma prime, you make it positive, you actually enlarge these incommensurate phases. So as you see here, this phase that when I turned on a small negative gamma prime was all zigzag is now back to being this spiral. And this is sort of consistent with expectations from at least tentative crystal structures for this where they look slightly less distorted. That's just kind of up in the air, but it's not inconsistent with the structure, the known structures of the lithium iridate. So what do these phases look like? So I just sort of picked a point in the middle of that phase. The wave vector again changes continuously, so it depends on exactly what parameters you pick, but there's a fairly sort of large plateau where the wave vector is near this 2m by 3 point. So this is the Brun zone here. This m is the wave vector of the zigzag phase, and there's a fairly large plateau where this q is actually quite close to that. So in the classical calculation, you can sort of just pin it to this 2m by 3 wave vector, which is commensurate, and sort of try to look at that as an approximation to your state. And what you find is a state that looks like this. It's slightly ferromagnetic. There's a threefold order to it. It's not single Q, so there is a small ferromagnetic component, and the relationship between these two Bragg peaks is not exactly what you'd expect from a single Q state. But one interesting bit about this state is that the wave vector, if you put it in sort of physical units, is about 0.4, which is approximately numbers that have been reported, hinted at, in the lithium iridate. So let me just summarize this. What we show here is that in this generic model, if we add a small amount of trigonal compression, we can stabilize the zigzag phase near the ferromagnetic Kadeev limit in a completely nearest neighbor model. Beyond this, looking at around small gamma prime, there's both this zigzag phase competing with this incommensurate spiral phase, which might have some relevance towards the lithium iridate. And further, this parameter regime, you can still have this large anisotropy, even these gamma terms, and still have a small excitation gap. If you want details, there's two papers here you can read. And thank you.
I have a question about zigzag phase. When you talk about zigzag phase, are you talking about the collinear phase, or you are talking about the phase which is characterized by this Q vector and might be incollinear? Because that's usually my confusion, because once you have a gamma term, I think you should have some non-collinearity.
This one we find is collinear.
Even in the presence of significant gamma term.
Even in the presence of significant gamma term, yes.
And then when you look for spin waves, you still do it around the collinear.
I do it, yeah, whatever we got out of the classical calculation is what we do the spin waves about.
So you mentioned that the gapless phase is on the top, and then you also have one on the bottom, and they're dual of each other. Now, if you look at the spin wave calculations naively, do they also look similar given that the interaction parameters changed?
So you actually have to do the transformation. So it's the duality is essentially a C2 spin rotation about the one direction. I don't think they should change all that much, but you should probably look at that Chalupka paper that I put up there, where they actually do that in detail. This one.
Any other question? So, if not, let's thank Jeff again, and then.